Right, so for those of you that perhaps don't already know me, my name's Paul Higgs and I'm a Chartered Planning and Development Surveyor. I've basically been in development for almost 40 years now. So my company is called Milbank Group and we're basically land planning and development experts. And a few years ago now, I set up a thing called Milbank Land Academy. And I train and support other developers, both big and small. So SME developers, right up to doing some training for the PLC house builders. So before we start, it's just want to make the point that I want to make sure everything I talk to you about today is relevant. It's really important to me. Total transparency. Of course, I'm a property developer, but I've also got a training business. So I'm going to make you a little offer at the end. But continued education is massively important to me because, you know, property development's a super high risk, high reward business, and you really do need to know what you're doing. So here we go. So let me just minimize this, get a bit of room. Right. Today, I'm going to show you how to find and create highly profitable real off-market deals, how you control and leverage those opportunities to basically create the maximum returns for yourself. And that actually can be done even if you have zero or very little funds of your own. And importantly, and this is really the key to everything, how you always de-risk the situation and add maximum planning value. So basically, you know, finding the right deals and adding maximum planning value is really what development is all about. So this is for you if you're in either a new or aspiring developer, or even if you're very, very experienced, perhaps you're a trader or even an investor, or someone that's just interested in property and realize it's actually big money to be made when you understand exactly how to identify the right deals and then know what to do next. So hopefully this next 60 minutes or so should be a bit of a game changer for you. So, right. Now, importantly, this what I'm going to about to tell you now is the sort of key, really. Property development is obviously a business, and business is all about balancing risk and reward. And the reason the rewards in property development can be massive is because the risks are also massive. So it means, you know, it really isn't something to be taken lightly, and you really do need to understand how it all really works. And how it all really works is basically this. Now, if you look at the bottom axis, as you go further along the development process, you need more time, you need more expertise, and usually you need more capital. But whatever the case, everything starts with land. Now, when we talk about land, that's not necessarily fields. Most of the time it's brownfield land or previously developed land, quite often existing buildings that you either convert, or more often in terms of the bigger things that I do, knock down and redevelop to a high density. So the property, the deal, the site, the land is where everything starts. Then the massive value is added in the middle part of the process through understanding planning and design inside out. Once you've got land and you've added maximum planning value to it, you of course build things or refurbish things. That's actually the most risky, time consuming bit of the whole process, which really means, you know, it's those first two bits that you have to understand inside out: finding the right off-market sites, adding maximum planning value to them. So, and I'll tell you in a minute about how I've realized that, so and why it's really important. So here's a little graph here from the HBF, the Home Builders Federation, looking into the decline of SME property developers. So as you can see, since the peak was 1988, which purely coincidentally was the year I built my first new build house, around that time, planning started getting increasingly tricky and difficult. And as it did, you know, it got harder and harder for developers and contractors and builders to do stuff. And a lot of them either retired, went bust, or gave up. I was 21 in 1988, so I was basically at the start of my career. So, you know, I wasn't going to give up. I had to basically stick with it and, you know, learn the hard way how to do it through what was really, really difficult times. Now there is a massive government push in order to encourage and support more SME developers, which is one of the reasons I started Milbank Land Academy a few years ago, to basically sort of pass on the knowledge that I've gained over the years. But of course, there isn't really anyone else out there that's been there, seen it, done it, talking about this stuff and training people properly. So just to tell you quickly why you should listen to me. As I said, I've been doing this for a very long time now. I started off cleaning the bogs on the building site in 1983, straight from school, became a site labourer, didn't really know what I wanted to do. One day, the property developers turned up in their flash suits and flash cars, and I thought, right, that's what I want to do. I'm going to be a property developer. Now, at the time, I didn't really understand the process. I thought in order to be a property developer, you had to know construction inside out. So I went to college, studied construction management, eventually became a site engineer. And then over the years, a trainee site manager and then a site manager. So I basically started out in construction because I thought that that's what I had to do to, in order to become a property developer. And at evenings and weekends, I was doing small deals. I bought my first house with a mate of mine when I was 17. We did it up evenings and weekends over a couple of years, sold it, made a few quid, did another one, and eventually built up to bigger and bigger deals. But at the time, we were buying things from estate agents or from the auctions, and auctions used to be really good in those days. They were a bit underground. Not everyone really knew about them. It's a totally different world now. I personally never buy things in auctions anymore. Sometimes sell things in auctions, but it was a different world back then. Anyway, basically what happened is, so my first 7 years of doing increasingly bigger developments, and as I mentioned, I built my first new build house in 1988, I eventually started to realize how much I didn't know. And I also started realizing the importance of planning. So I then decided, look, if I want to get really good at this stuff, learn everything I need to know, I'm going to have to get properly educated. Nearly went and studied planning, decided that wasn't the wrong thing. It wasn't the right thing. So I studied land economics, became a chartered surveyor, all with a view to getting a job in a big developers, because, you know, I knew that that's where I would get the experience and knowledge that I really needed. So I became a land buyer for Lang Homes. I then got headhunted, became a land buyer for Barratts, ended up as head of land for Barratts, biggest developer in the country. So I worked for PLCs for nearly 10 years, just in order to get the knowledge and experience doing big deals and learning how the whole business really works. I eventually managed to escape in 2003 and set up my own business, Milbank Group, now doing bigger deals than I was doing back in the 80s, having learned much more. And I've basically been doing that ever since. One of our developments won the Evening Standard New Homes Awards in 2013. I started up Milbank Land Academy in 2013 as well. Became the founding investor in Land Tech, which hopefully you've heard of, Land Technologies, Land Insight, basically the fastest growing prop tech company in the UK, and the number one bit of site finding and development software. And I also lecture in advanced development evaluations at Southbank University. And a couple of years ago, our training won we were finalists for Best Training Initiative in the House Builder Awards. The House Builder Awards are like the proper big industry awards with all the mainstream developers. So hopefully it's clear from that that, you know, I've been there, seen it, done it, still doing it every day of the week. And therefore, you know, I'm very well qualified to help other people understand how the industry really works and exactly what you need to do. Here's a couple of our current and recent deals. I still do quite a lot of development consultancy for the big developers. Here's a site I bought in West London, GlaxoSmithKline's old head office on the Great West Road, 900 apartments, hotel, supermarket. I basically negotiated and secured the site for them and got planning. Here's one of our more recent ones. Just got planning last week for 8 houses in Cock Fosters in North London, which we're going to be building. That's a nice little scheme. Oh, and here's one of my other current ones, Hentucks Farm in Chalfont St. Giles, which we're on site building now. And hopefully will be another award winner, because it's a really, you know, out of the ordinary interesting scheme. So anyway, so that's it. So encouraging SME developers. There's all sorts of research been done over the years into what are the biggest challenges and barriers to growth for smaller developers. These are what the surveys said. The availability, and remember, so this is based on research, yeah? Between 37% and 34% of the developers surveyed basically said that the availability and cost of viable land was the biggest issue that they had to deal with. Closely second, about the same number basically said the biggest problem was the planning process and the associated cost of dealing with it. So as you see, those, you know, planning and land fairly equal. And then finally, 20% said that it was the availability of finance. Now, I can basically tell you now, if you've got the right land and the right planning, finance sort of sorts itself out. Unless you're in 2008 in the middle of a big crash or something like that, you've got the right land, the right buildings, and then the right planning, the finance isn't really a problem. Which basically brings us back to the key answer, really. You know, it's development is all about understanding land and planning. So how can you solve the problems of land and planning? Well, obviously, the quickest, easiest way is by listening to what I'm going to tell you now and through some of our training. And once you know that, of course, understand land and planning, the third problem is pretty much no longer an issue. And sometimes, actually, we can become development partners and even fund deals, you know, with some of the people that we train. So anyway, that's that. So let me just give you a little example here. This is sort of leading up to something key I'm going to tell you in a minute, right? So here's a little site that we got planning on a few years ago. Basically, some old lock-up garages in Croydon in South London, owned by another developer. He had gone and tried to get planning 4 times. So so he bought the site, he owned the site, had it for nearly 10 years in the end, tried to get planning 4 times, every single scheme was refused. The site was introduced to me. I had a quick look, could see the problems and the answer literally straight away. So I managed to negotiate and secure a deal with the landowner. I say it was another developer. So most of my deals are £1 option agreements, or the vast majority are £1 option agreements. Because he was a wheeler dealer developer, almost on principle, he wouldn't let me have a £1 option agreement. I had to have a £10,000 option agreement. So I gave him a £10,000 fee to allow me to secure the site whilst I went away and got planning. This is the scheme that I got planning for. Which was actually more square footage. So this was bigger than all of the 4 schemes that he had got refused over the previous years. Nice little scheme, which I eventually flipped to a housing association. So the land was secured on the 10 grand option. It's a 400 grand purchase price. I basically sold the site at just under £1 million. So I basically had added 550 grand just under worth of planning value. Yeah. Now, the people that bought the site, assuming that build costs didn't go up and sales values were what they thought they were going to be, would have ended up making 375 grand. So, as you can see, you look at what I made by doing the bit in the middle, look at what they made by doing the time-consuming, risky bit, i.e. building the thing. And you can, you know, hopefully that explains the point how all of the value, the real value, is added in the middle at that land and planning stage. So now, when I tell this story, the obvious question that everyone asks is, well, what was it that you saw? How did you get planning when he couldn't get planning? And bear in mind, this wasn't the beginning. This was another so-called experienced developer. But of course, you know, he isn't as experienced as me and didn't see the way things the way I did. So the answer to that question is basically this system process I'm going to show you now. It's how you answer that real key question, really. How do you add maximum value to land? So what I effectively did in order to answer that question, in order to explain that to other people, go away, reverse engineer everything I'd learned over the previous 30 plus years, in order to answer and help solve the key challenges that everyone has in development. So this doesn't, you know, whether you're beginners or whether you're the biggest developer in the country, these, what I'm just about to show you, are the key challenges in development. So firstly, remember what we're trying to do is know how to do these things here. Find real off-market sites and then add maximum value to them through understanding, planning, and design. Yeah. But there's a number of problems people have in doing this, right? These are the challenges, right? Firstly, they don't know how to find the best opportunities with minimal competition. When they do find the opportunities, they don't know how to quickly assess the potential without wasting a whole load of time and money. So this is one of the biggest problems for a lot of people. You know, they waste time and money looking at things that just aren't deals. Now, with a bit of experience and a bit of knowledge, and by following this process I'm going to show you, you can know that really, really quickly. I mean, the amount of times people show me deals or so-called deals, And I'll literally tell them in 30 seconds, that isn't a deal. And I'll say, well, how can you know that? And I'll say, well, because of this, and this. Yeah, there is a way of knowing this. And it's really important that you are able to do it really quickly so that you don't waste a whole load of time and money looking at things that aren't going to go anywhere. Once having established that something could or should be a deal, you then need to know how to negotiate it and secure it on the best terms possible. So there's all different ways of structuring and securing deals. I say my favorite is £1 option agreements, but it's literally horses for courses, different for different situations. As part of securing the right deals on the right terms, and this is major, this bit here, you need to know how to arrive at the optimal scheme design that's going to maximize the value of the opportunity, and which at the same time will maximize your profitability. Because at the end of the day, landowners pretty much always want top dollar. So the name of the game is knowing how to create maximum planning value out of any situation that you then created, you know, as big a pie as possible to be shared between you and the landowner. How that pie is divvied up and shared between you and the landowner, it basically comes down to negotiation. And so two things you need to get really good at. One is the negotiation, but even more importantly, to be honest, is maximizing the value, because the bigger the difference you can create between what something's worth as it is and what you could make it worth with planning, the more there is to be shared around. So maximizing land and property values is basically the key, really. Closely linked to that, of course, is getting planning permission, because, you know, there's no point assuming that, I don't know, you're going to get planning for 10 houses, 20 houses, 100 houses, 5 flats, or whatever it might be, and then you don't, because the whole, you know, all your assumptions are there irrelevant. So closely linked to maximizing, optimizing the design is knowing what you're going to get planning for. So planning and design are totally linked. An important thing to mention here, because I know lots of people are now interested in permitted development, for example, permitted development is not as quick and simple as easy, or as easy as some people will have you believe, right? If you go away and look at all of the new permitted, and we've got to do separate training on this, right? If you look at all of the detailed permitted development changes, they are now much, much more akin to planning applications. So yeah, it's a bit of a fast track. Subject to ticking all of the boxes, you can hopefully get PD quicker, but there are now a lot of boxes to tick, and it's much more akin to a planning application. So people that tell you just fill in a form and you get planning, it's bullshit, basically. There's a lot of detailed planning and design information that you need to learn. Once you've got land and the best planning, of course, you need to know how to evaluate and manage the situation, in particular, how to get the right funding, how to manage the best professionals and put together the right teams at every stage of the process. Finally, of course, you need to think about your various exit routes. What is it you're trying to do? Do you want to hold the thing? Do you want to flip the thing? Are you building to sell? It's always different. Now, depending on your exit, you'll do different things earlier on in the process. So basically, these are the biggest things people need to know and struggle with. Basically, I've reverse engineered what I've learned to put together a system for people to follow. I basically called it the insider system because it's based on now nearly 40 years of knowledge, experience, and inside information. Certainly stuff that the major developers don't want everyone else knowing. I got to the point whereby, rather than keep everything secret, I'm much more interested in helping people do things the right way and get more good quality housing and developments created. So here's the 7 steps in my system, which I'm going to talk you through in a minute. Number one is identifying the right sites, finding the very best sites with minimal competition. Number two is knowing exactly how you navigate the situation to quickly assess the potential. Number three is knowing how you negotiate and structure the right deals so you can secure things on the very best terms possible. Now, this next bit is major, 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 really important. Step four, it's called instructs because it is our job as developers or traders or whatever you might be doing to instruct the professional team, not ask. People again that tell you, well, you just go and get an architect, you just go and get a planning consultant, they'll do it all for you. They will not do it all for you. We need to understand the process and manage the process. That's how you make the big money. This is not something that you can just fully outsource and you think someone else can do it for you. Of course, you don't need to know everything about planning to start with. Of course, you're not going to be an architect, but you at the very least need to know enough to ask all of the right questions and manage the situation. This is not some hands-off thing where you can just give it all to someone else and they'll sort it out for you. Unfortunately, why would it be? There's too much money to be made. If it was that easy, everyone would be doing it. You then need to learn how to drive the planning process. So again, really important, it's drive. It's not sit back and watch and see what happens. You need to understand planning inside out if you're going to gain the very best planning permission every time and quickly as well. Once you've got land and planning and the optimum design, of course, you've got to find the right team to get the thing built or flipped or whatever, depending on what your model is. And finally, you need to make it all happen in order to realize your preferred exit. Get it flipped, get it built, get it refinanced, whatever it is you might be doing. So that's what you need to do. Here's the system. I'm just going to talk you through it very, very quickly because we've only got a while. So first steps, identifying the right sites. So throughout this whole process, as you can see, there are seven major steps: identify, navigate, secure, instruct, drive, engage, and then realize your preferred exit. There's between 5 and 7 sub steps all along the way, and they're all really, really important, and there's a lot of detail in all of them. So clearly we've not got time to go through everything. Now I'll just dive in a bit to the first part of the process, identifying the right sites. So you need to understand the land market inside out. I'm mainly a residential developer, for example. I do a bit of mixed use. I've done a little bit of commercial here and there, but irrespective of that, I make it my business to understand the land market inside out. So every time I'm looking at a bit of land, I'm not thinking how many houses can I get on there. I'm thinking, what is it that's going to maximize the value of that land? I'm able to do that by knowing the land market. You then need to understand planning inside out, because there's a massive tension between what we want and need as developers to maximize land values and what many planners want, and certainly what local people want. You know, whilst everyone appreciates there's a massive need for housing, no one wants it anywhere near where they live. So, you know, planners and locals all imagine little, you know, no development at all, or little ideal situations like this. That's just not realistic. As developers, we are driven to maximize land values, which generally means creating higher densities. So knowing how to do that whilst, you know, designing sustainable things is a real art. So that's a massive tension in the whole process. Part of understanding planning, remember, this is just high level, I'm trying to give you a run through here, is understanding this. Probably the most important little bit of legislation in all of planning law, making the point that decisions on planning applications must be made in accordance with the development plan. Every local authority has got their own development plan, unless other material considerations indicate otherwise. So that's the absolute key, is understanding, well, okay, what might other material considerations be? Because if you just followed the letter of the law and you did what the rule book said, almost guaranteed you'd never get a deal done, because you couldn't get anything to stack up. So the real R is understanding planning inside out, so you know how and where you can stretch the rules a bit, what you really can do and what you really can't do, because the planners aren't going to tell you what you can do. They'll tell you what you can't do, but you need to understand planning in order to find the angles, basically. Part of identifying the right sites is understanding, well, what's a site and what's not a site. Some of the things, type of deals, you know, I do a lot of, are everything we're looking for is underdeveloped. So that basically means there's scope to add either more saleable square footage or more valuable square footage by changing the use. Usually it's a case of doing the both. It's all different types of deals. You find different ones in different places. Obviously I'm a founder investor in Land Insight, so you know, it's one of the tools we use all the time, but the tool on its own is not enough. You need to know and understand what it all means. So when you're looking at a site, when you're looking at an area, you know, knowing, well, what might have potential and what might not. A 100% you need to understand all of that stuff inside out, if you're a developer. And all of the next things I'm going to tell you about adding maximum planning value, you need to understand if you want to secure the deal yourself, if you want to add the value and trade the thing on, if you want to tie the thing up and then build it out, either to sell or to hold, you need to understand planning and design. A lot of people just want to be site finders or sourcers or land agents. In those situations, you only need to understand the first part of the process, how to identify the sites. And then typically you can introduce those situations to other people who will pay you between 2% and 3% of the land value. So, you know, let's just say look at the second one. If it's a £1 million site, and to be honest, certainly in London and the South East, you don't get much land for £1 million. That's a 20 grand fee, could be 30 grand fee. Sometimes you'll get 3% just for finding the site and then introducing it to the right person. You know, my sites personally are typically a lot bigger. So you've got a £4 million site, that's going to be an 80 grand fee, maybe 120 grand fee. That's how the industry works, right? When it comes to proper off-market sites. So there's a lot of people that are really interested in site finding and sourcing, make a really good living just by doing that. So you can either learn the site finding and identification process yourself with a view to doing it for yourself, or you can just do that with a view to introducing situations to other people. Here's one of my deals from a little while ago. Someone found the site completely off market, introduced it to me. I tied it up for just under £4 million. They got a fee of just under 80 grand. I then did the clever bit in the middle. Now, this was a few years ago before permitted development. And actually, this is in London Borough of Islington anyway, where there is no PD for office to resi. So this was tricky planning. If you look down the bottom there, I created one point. I refurbed the offices on the ground floor and got permission to convert the top two floors and put a new penthouse on the roof. Just getting that permission added £1.4 million worth of planning uplift, basically. Now, at that point, I could have sold my position on for the 1.4. I didn't want to do it. I kept the thing. I built it out. So I got the full triangle, the land, the planning and design, and the build bit at the end. Made just over £2.5 million in total for building the thing. And that's one of the ones won the Evening Standard New Homes Award as well. So that looks very good on the CV. Now, one of the things to mention when it comes to proper off-market sites is that a lot of people think that there are no opportunities out there or no proper off-market opportunities. Absolutely guaranteed there are. So for example, here's a site I developed a couple of years ago. When I first started learning about land and option agreements and planning back in the 80s, I didn't really know what I was doing. So I tried to do a lot of things and most of them didn't work. This was a site I spotted and I approached the landowners all in the wrong way, didn't get a response, didn't do anything with it, thought it was just a dead deal. A couple of years ago, which at that point would have been probably 30 years after I originally approached the people, I had a little drive down there. I was amazed to still see the thing still there, undeveloped. And this time I knew exactly what I was doing. Approached the landowner in the right way, got a foot in the door, said the right thing, tied them up in an option agreement. That's the site when I basically demolished everything. That was the thing after I developed it. The important part of this story is that there is a timing element to this whole business as well. So, you know, just because something looks like a site or an obvious opportunity, you might assume, well, someone else has already got it tied up or it's already gone or it's too late or whatever. Not necessarily, because there is a massive time element to this whole process of finding real off-market opportunities. But separately to that, you know, one of the things you really need to learn is, well, what might be an opportunity and what might not? Because the more you know about planning and design, the more you will spot things that other people haven't spotted. So anyway, that is the identify part of the process, which you got to get good at whatever you're doing. Simple as that. You got to get good at finding real proper off-market sites, because the alternative is if you're buying things that are on or in the market, the price is getting bid up and it gets expensive before you've even started. The only way you buy those sites is being the person that pays the most. Paying the most for stuff is a terrible business model. So, but of course, next, where this bit in the middle is where all of the real massive value is added. So let's have a little quick look at that. I'm not going to have time to talk you through all of the bits of that, but this bit in the middle is a bit we need to understand inside out, because that's where all of the value is created. So navigate. So remember, we need to quickly navigate and assess the potential. That's really, really important so that we don't get sucked into wasting our time basically on things that aren't going to go anywhere. I see so often, you know, very often people have even bought sites, they've paid good money and they own them, yeah. And I literally look at them and I say, in 30 seconds, I know it's not a deal. So you need to learn how to do that so that you don't waste time and money. Next, you need to know how to negotiate and secure the right deals. Now, there's numerous ways to do this, dependent on the site, the situation. Everything's different, dependent on you and your circumstances. Most of my deals, probably 90% of my deals, are option agreements. Now, the beauty of option agreements, if you don't know, is that they give you, of course, the option to buy something, but not the obligation. So basically, they allow you to control the land, even if you haven't got the money to buy the land. Now, the reason I started doing these years and years and years and years ago was because I didn't have the money. I was just starting out, you know, hadn't done brilliantly to start with. But one day I discovered that you can basically control land with a bit of paper, an option agreement. And very often, if you know how to do it right, you only need £1. So £1 is just the fee, the legal consideration to make it valid. And then, of course, that buys you time in order to go away and add the planning value. So even to today, to this day, you know, sometimes I'll just go and buy stuff unconditionally. I can do that now. I'll just go and buy it if I see the potential. And that's the way the deal has to be done. But given a choice, I will always still rather secure it on an option agreement, because, like, why wouldn't I? What, you know, why would I go and buy a bit of land for £2 million if I can control it with £1? Yeah. So option agreements are without a doubt the most sensible, safe mechanism for controlling land. Obviously, there's all sorts of other ways. Option agreements are my favorite. Next, having secured the land, you need to instruct the optimum design. So this bit is absolutely key. So remember, we're still in the middle here now. We're in, this is all of that those four bits in the middle: navigating the potential, securing the deal. These next two bits, instruct and drive, are really where, you know, all the skill and value is added. So as you can see, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 key parts of instructing the optimum design that you need to know about. One is understanding detailed planning. Other parts of it are understanding the market, so you've got the exact right type, size, and mix of accommodation, whether that might be commercial, residential, different sizes and types of units. Of course, you need to understand your costs inside out. You need to appraise the whole situation inside out. You need to fully assess all of the constraints and opportunities of the site, including lots and lots of things that are invisible. Could be covenants, easements, other legal restrictions. You wouldn't even know they were there unless you knew how and where to look. Could be services, could be contamination, it could be ground conditions. There's literally a massive, massive long list of constraints, one of which could absolutely kill the deal before you've even started. So understanding all of those things is massively, massively important. You gather all of that information together and then you instruct your professional team. These are the constraints. These are the key issues. This is what you're trying to get out of the scheme, because they're not going to do that. That's not part of their job. So you need to know what these things are. You need to understand this stuff so that you can properly instruct the professional team. It's not called ask. Yeah, people that say, oh, you know, I've got a site, what do you do? Go, I'll talk to an architect, talk to a planning consultant. They'll tell you all the answers. They won't. They'll tell you some of the answers. And of course, you need to find excellent consultants and work with them. But it is not their job to know all of this other stuff that I'm talking about. That's our job. That's what we get the big money for. So understanding this middle section, instruct, is absolutely key. And as I mentioned earlier, that is closely linked to driving the planning process in order to gain the very best planning consent. So again, we're still in the middle, that key bit, adding maximum planning value. And as you can see here, there's five key parts of driving the planning process that you also need to know about. Start with coming up with your planning strategy. So it's horses for courses. It's different for different sites, different times, different local authorities. It's all different. So one of the biggest mistakes, you know, I see people make is, you know, particularly on things like Facebook, and someone will ask a question and people will start coming up with, oh, you need to do a pre-app, you need to do this, you need to do that. You can't possibly say that without having already done a load of detailed research to work out what is the best strategy. Sometimes it'll be a pre-app, a lot of times it won't. It's hardly ever an outline planning application, just so you know. So that's one of the worst bits of advice I hear people, I will submit a planning an outline application. I've got time to tell you why just here. But, you know, have a word with the planners, see what they say. Absolutely worst bit of advice ever. One, most planning authorities haven't got time to tell you. It's hard enough to get them to deal with your planning application even once it's in, submitted and live. And it's not their job to tell you what you can do with a site. And in actual fact, they don't know anyway. Because as I mentioned earlier, they're not thinking about maximizing things. They're thinking about minimizing things. Yeah. So again, you need to learn and understand the planning process in order to know, well, okay, what scheme would I get consent for? The scheme, the design, and the planning all go together. Understanding that is, of course, what adds maximum planning value. Having done all of that, so let's just have a little look at where we are here. You'll see that middle section, planning and design, it's where all of the value is added. Once you've added the value, you're then in a fantastic position, right? So at that point, depending on what you want to do, you've got to engage with the right team. That could be professionals to get it built, project managers, contractors, obviously funders. You need to think about how you get something funded in the best way possible. It's a whole load of stuff to know and do there. But it all gets easier after you've added maximum planning value. And finally, you need to choose your preferred exit. Now, obviously, you don't go through that whole big long process, get to the end, and then decide, okay, what am I going to do? In actual fact, it works a little bit in reverse. You need to think about, okay, what would I like to do? What are my preferred exits? Because that will inform a lot of what happens earlier down the process. You might want to be just finding sites and introducing them to other people. That's fairly simple and easy. You don't have to know that much about planning and design. If you want to do any more than that, then you need to know a lot. So, you know, you might want to be building to hold for your own portfolio. You might just want to be adding maximum value and then flipping the thing. You might be just building to sell, the typical developer's model, building stuff, selling it. So it will always be different. Depending on what your plan is, you'll do things slightly different earlier down. For example, you'll design a build to rent or build to hold scheme slightly different to you would a build to sell scheme. Let's have a quick look at some of these things finally. So you've got build to sell, standard model. Obviously, build to rent, which is what lots of the big funds and institutions are doing. Build to rent for yourself is effectively build to hold. It's another one of my recent little schemes. conversion of the upper parts, a little bit of commercial on the ground floor, and then some new build around the back where I've got planning in total for 8 flats and 2 houses and a bit of commercial. Plan there is to refinance that one and hold. That was part of my plan from the beginning, hence I designed it in a certain way. JVs with landowners are probably my favourite. Hentucks Farm, the one I showed you earlier, that's actually a JV with a landowner. I'm building that at the moment. £1 option agreement, which basically allowed me to go away, get planning. I've got planning. The landowners have now put the land into the deal, which makes it much easier to fund. I will build it. I will sell it. We'll split the proceeds 50-50. And of course, the beauty of that is that I don't have to buy the land. So they're one of my probably favorite types of deals. Trading a bit like that little story I told you about earlier with the garages in Croydon, where you secure the site, ideally on an option agreement, add maximum planning value, then sell it on for the uplifted planning value. That was that one there, if you remember, made 550 grand on a very small scheme, basically, where the previous developer had been refused planning 4 times. And again, I was able to do that based on the fact that, I've followed this system that I've talked to you about, and it works. So that is that. Finally, another interesting JV type related exit is partnering with builders or contractors, potentially cutting their bill on the deal. If you do want to build the thing, to either sell or to hold for yourself. So, key things to remember. Everything starts with land, with the site, with the building, with the deal. But it's got to be proper off-market land, off-market property, off-market deals, so that you don't get involved in paying too much before you've even started. And if you want to develop or trade for yourself, i.e. you're just not finding sites to introduce to other people, if you want to be doing this stuff properly, you've got to learn how to create value yourself, and that's basically through understanding planning and design inside out. So bottom line is this: you really got to learn how the whole process really works and how everything fits together in order to get the very most out of every deal. And remember, there is no quick and easy. Even permitted development now, there's a whole load of planning and design stuff that you need to know. If anyone's telling you, you just go and fill in a form, get planning, it's not true, right? You need to understand design and planning, because there's a much bigger picture to maximizing the full value of any opportunity. So finally, also really important to remember, the reason you need to know this stuff is because it's not the planners or architects' job to do everything. They should be really good at their little individual area, but someone needs to understand how it all fits together, basically oversee and manage the process. That's what developers do. That's what traders have to learn to do. That's what we get the big money for. So there isn't really any shortcut other than to learn this stuff, if that's what you're doing. Anyway, if you want to learn how to do this stuff properly, we've got tons and tons of training. This is our lowest cost training, which effectively goes into the rest of the detail about all of those steps from start to finish in order to get sites identified, negotiated, secured, come up with the right design, add maximum planning value. It's only 295 quid plus VAT. We've got, at the moment, 103 excellent Trustpilot reviews. We've only just started using Trustpilot relatively recently. So, you can see yourself. We've got a relatively new website, Milbank Land Academy. Go there. You can see what other people say. As part of this today, we'll give you 1 month free subscription to Land Insight. to have a play with if you don't already use it. It is the industry leading software. I know there's other stuff out there. You know, it's like comparing a Mini to a Rolls Royce, really. You know, all of the PLC developers and house builders use Land Insight, not anything else. And there's a reason for that. And on top of that, and this is really important, I know what happens with lots of online training, people buy it and then they don't really do it, or they forget to do it, or they do half of it and the rest of it. I've done it myself, right? So I know what it's like. In order to make sure everyone can get the most out of this, in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to do a two-hour live follow-up and a Q&A with me personally. So hopefully that'll incentivize people to actually get on and watch it. So basically, this is like a whole day's online training. It's all split into modules for those separate sections that I've told you, going into every one of the sub-steps. So remember, seven major steps, between five and seven sub-steps and things you need to know all about. We go into all of that. It's a whole day's training, split up into modules online. So you can, you know, watch an hour a day, however you want to do it. And then in 2 weeks' time, we're going to have a live Q&A follow-up. If you've got any questions on that, on your deals, on anything, it'll incentivize you to do it. And obviously, we can deal with any questions you might have. So that's that. That's going to be for the first 10 people only. So just to make it nice and intimate and, you know, we can have a good chat. That's it, really. So if you fancy it, it's 100% money back guarantee, no questions asked. If you know, if you don't like it, you don't fancy it for whatever reason, that's no problem. Just let us know. And say it's only £295 for basically a full day's training. Here's the link. So if you go to that, I'll stick it in a chat and then I'll have a look at your questions. That will be that. So
thank you so much, Paul, for the presentation. I mean, it shows the level of your experience there. You've really started from the very beginning and walked your way, you know, to where you are now, and it shows the experience from your presentation and lots of positive comments as well in the chat. I was just going to ask you, so for people who are starting newly in land and development, obviously you've said, you know, we need to be able to oversee and manage the process. It does take a bit of experience to get to that point. What are the options that a newbie would have in that interim to be able to do this and learn as they do it as well?
Well, look, so it's really interesting. So when I started, there was literally no training. Everything I did was by trial and error, which I've got to tell you is the slowest, most expensive way to learn. Yeah. And now I didn't have a choice. So that's all I could do. That's why eventually, after almost 7 years of trial and error, ballsing up probably 95% of the things I tried to do, because I was literally, you know, learning the hard way, I eventually came to the conclusion that the only way I was going to learn what I wanted to learn was actually go into university, spend 5 years studying this stuff part-time, all with a view to getting a job with a big developer to get that experience. So the bottom line is, really, I think there's only two ways to do this stuff. You either do it slowly yourself by trial and error, which is slow and is expensive. And I got to say, when it comes to development, it's just like literally too high risk to do that, you know, because the implications of getting it wrong are, you know, you'll literally lose fortunes, right? So the only sensible thing to do is to benefit from someone else's experience who's already been there, seen it, done it, made all the mistakes, and basically, you know, follow a system, follow a model, do what you're told, really.
Great. There was a question in the chat. I'm just going to find it. It was actually more of a comment. And somebody said, most sites are overpriced, speculative values and crazy investors buying it. And it's difficult to find real deals. It's like a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, which has, there's a lot of truth to that, right? Absolutely. Every site on the market or with planning permission already is absolutely overpriced. Because you know, this is one of the things. Remember, I trade sites and I develop sites, yeah? So I know what people, you know, I'm one of the people selling overpriced sites. Because why wouldn't I, right? I've tied it up, I've secured it on good terms, I've added maximum planning value. If for whatever reason I don't fancy building it, maybe it's too small, or maybe it's not in my area, or maybe I've got too much on, I'm going to sell it. And people, what tends to happen is, you know, when you're selling a site, any site with one planning, you're only looking for one nutcase, yeah, who's going to pay you crazy money. What tends to happen is you get a number of nutcases literally fighting each other, bidding the price up in order to secure the opportunity. You can't get involved in that, because what that means, if you buy and win those sites, you are the biggest nutcase, which means, you know, there's now, what happens half the time, the market goes up and gets people out the shit, yeah, and they might just about make a bit of money, or at least they won't go bust. But of course, that doesn't happen all the time, and you can't rely on that. That's just speculation. That's not sensible business or development. So, yeah, sites are overpriced. Everything on the market or with planning or in the public domain is always overpriced, which is, you know, why my whole model has always been to find and create real 100% off-market opportunities myself. And there is a way of doing it. It's literally what I do. It's what I teach. It's what I've been doing for nearly 40 years now. So, yeah, that's the key. Yeah, absolutely. You can't be looking at things that are on the market if you're sensible.
And do you have any other tips to finding opportunities? So I know you've talked about land insight. Have you got any other tips of how people can find these opportunities?
Yeah, look, there's, as I say, so, you know, we used to do, well, we still do actually, it's online, a whole full day's worth of training about site finding, about everything that goes into the process, what you need to do. But I guess in short, you need to keep your eyes and ears open. Yeah, so it's who you talk to, what you read, what you hear, little clues that you get. But the key thing is, You need to, the reason why understanding planning in particular and design is so important is because it's like the more you know, the more you see. It's like the more you know about this stuff, the more your radar is switched on to opportunities and situations that everyone else misses because they didn't see the potential.
Yeah, absolutely. Sharon wants to know, how did the 1989 and... is it MIRA removal and impact affect you? Do you get to understand that? I'm not quite sure.
I think, is that Sharon?
Sharon.
That? Sharon, yeah. I think that probably Sharon's asking about mortgage interest relief at source. I'm guessing. It's certainly nothing to do with development, MIRA. She can confirm with us. Probably about the mortgage interest relief changes. Not a lot, really. I mean, look. This is another interesting thing. I've been developing through three proper, arguably four busts, booms and busts now. So, you know, I've learned the hard way. I know what happens when the shit hits the fan, yeah? 2008 for me was super, super painful. I had five big schemes on the go. Four of them were funded with RBS. One of them was funded with Close Brothers. They were all really good schemes. They had a load of value in them. I'd added massive planning value. Banks obviously run out of money. So the RBS pulled the plug on all of my deals because, one, they couldn't afford to carry on funding them. And two, of course, they wanted to nick the deals off me to get the value out of them. So that was super painful. That happened to a lot of developers at the time, which is another important thing people need to understand is, like, you know, funding is super easy to get at the moment, but whatever you do, don't go thinking like that it can't change really quickly and that the banks won't sort of have your pants down and pull the plug the second it starts getting a bit hairy. So, you know, don't trust banks, I suppose is one big message. You know, the beauty of securing things again on option agreements is that you control them, you don't have to own them. So if things change and you don't want to do the deal, you just don't want to do the deal. If things change and I don't want to build it, I want to sell it on, I would just assign my agreement. Yeah. So let someone else, you know, buy it off of me. So
Okay. Sean has a question. It's quite a long one. I don't know if Sean, if you want to unmute and ask. It's something about permitted development extension. Sean, are you able to unmute? No. Okay. So if permitted development extension has not been removed by a planning condition within the original planning approval, can I add an extension to the new building during the construction process?
I'm just going down to the question.
Yep. Sean at 122.
Hang on.
Sean, I have unmuted you.
Yeah, I've asked him to unmute. Maybe he's not in a place to be able to.
Okay. Let me read. So obviously, Sean, if you can hear us, jump in. Otherwise, if permitted development extension has not been removed by a planning condition within the original plan approval, can I add an extension to the new building during the construction process of the main dwelling? If not, when is the best time to extend? Interesting question, right? So let's just say, so if this question is about, let's just say, like an extension to a house, I'm thinking that's what it's about. So strictly, you can't, you know, subject to it not permitted development rights not being removed, let's just say you're building a house. Once that house exists, then subject to it meeting all of the criteria, you know, it's not a conservation area, whatever other restrictions might be, subject to it meeting all of the existing criteria, you can then go and build the extension do whatever else you like under PD if it has permitted development rights. But you can't do that until it exists. So an existing finished house has got PD. A half-built house in process, being built, hasn't got PD, if you think about it. So strictly, I know it doesn't make a lot of sense, but strictly you'd have to wait until it was a house in order to get the PD for it. What you would probably do in reality is, knowing that you're going to get PD anyway, and if you're wanting to build it whilst you're on site building it, it's a bit risky, but you'd probably just build it anyway and then get retrospective PD afterwards, if that makes sense.
Brilliant, thank you. There's some questions about the offer you've given about the 7 key steps course. Somebody said she can't make it on the 16th. Do you have any other dates?
We had not planned any other dates. The reason for doing it like that was to make it not too far away, to incentivize people to actually get on with it and do it. So give them a couple of weeks to get, you know, before. If anyone else is really interested and they can't do those dates, send us a message and we'll sort something else out. Even if it's a little one-on-one with someone, yeah?
Thank you. Thanks for that. Somebody else also wants to know if design and planning will be covered on the course.
Yeah.
Okay. So the question, there's an interesting question here about option agreement. And I noticed that in the example as well, where you give 10,000 for an option. So Henry wants to know, what is involved in an option agreement? Do you need to negotiate the buy price in the contract if planning is approved?
Yeah, absolutely. So an option agreement, if you should occasionally know, it's a type of, a really simple type of contract that gives you the option to buy something. Well, not necessarily buy, actually. It's an option to do anything. Usually, the way I do things, it's an option to buy the land, yeah? So going back to that lock-up garage one, for example, I could see the potential. The guy thought the site wasn't worth very much because he'd had 4 refused planning applications, yeah? So I knew that that site could probably be worth not far off of £1 million, because of course I knew what I could get planning for. Yeah. I went and had a negotiation. I was able to secure it, i.e. agree an option to purchase the land for £400,000. Yeah. So yes, you have to, you don't always, but sensibly you need to agree the purchase price up front. Most landowners, they, you know, there are some people that they'll try to do it where they'll fix the price to that, they'll say they'll get the land valued at the time and things like that. I'll tell you from experience, most landowners don't want that because they want certainty. They want to know what is it that they will or won't be getting if and when you get planning. Yeah. So you really need to be agreeing a fixed purchase price. In the example I just gave you, it was £400,000. So I've got an option to buy it for £400,000. I go away, I get planning that makes it worth nearly £1 million. So I've effectively, I've now got a contract that says I can buy it for 400, but I've now made it worth £1 million. Yeah. So what I effectively do is sell my contract to the end user for the difference between, so I, in that example, just under £550,000. So basically, yes, really, you do need to agree the purchase price, the option price, which is why it's so important that you understand planning and design, because that's what tells you what scheme you're going to get, what the purchase price should be with planning.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's very important in the example you gave when you gave 10,000 for the option, because you need to be sure that you're going to get, get your money back.
Yeah, it's a very good point, actually. I should just reiterate something on that. Most of my options are £1 option agreements. Yeah. And you, of course, you need to, you're not buying the land for a pound, but £1 is the legal consideration that you need to make it a valid contract. Yeah. Most of my deals are £1 option agreements. You've got to know what to say in order to explain that to a landowner so that they, you know, they don't think you're trying to nick their land for a pound. The one that I talked about, Croydon Garages, that was a £10,000 option fee. That is not normally the case. Remember, the guy I was buying from was a developer. He was a bit of a wheeler dealer, a bit of hard nose and all the rest of it. Almost on principle, he wasn't going to let me have a £1 option. Hence, I had to pay a £10,000 option fee. To be honest, I would have paid a £100,000 option fee if I had to, because of course I'm buying it for 400 and I know it's probably worth £1 million, because I know what I can do with it.
Yep. Interesting.
We do need to finish now, reason being, otherwise no one will get the time to have a snack. Paul, it's an absolute pleasure having you here. I would request you to either leave a phone number that people get in touch with you, or a link that they can get in touch with you, because I can see some of the people writing here, they have more questions, and we could carry on this for a long period of time. If you leave us them a link that they can get in touch with you or one of your team members, either link or a phone number, I'm pretty sure many of these people would be happy to sign up on your course. I shared, like I said earlier, you know, you've got more experience than my age. So like I said, Paul is absolutely amazing. I would heavily recommend you, but his email is there, info@millbanklandacademy.co.uk. Please take this email them. They will come back to you. They are a very proactive team. I've dealt with their team as well. But accept my apology, Paul. We will not have enough time for people to have a very quick snack.
All right.
Thank you once again. Pleasure to have you here. And thank you.